the Yes to Life show, the show that introduces you to all the key movers and shakers in the world of integrative medicine. This week's show is a little different in that it's about Yes to Life itself. Yes to Life is a UK registered charity that's been supporting people with cancer for well over a decade. And in order to give you more of an insight into exactly what the charity does, I'm visiting the charity office in Hoxton, London, to speak to the Executive Director, Sue De Cesare. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Robin.
Great to have you on the show. It gives us a chance to talk about Yes to Life and all the ways in which it's supporting people with cancer.
Great.
So I'd like to start out with you telling us maybe what brought you to Yes to Life. What were the things in your experience, in your life, that brought you to the point of wanting to get involved with helping people with cancer? And particularly, why were you interested in integrative medicine?
I think like a lot of people that moved to working into the charity sector from a corporate background, I had quite a number of life changes that were all taking place at the same time. One of which was I was pretty sick of making lots of money for greedy organisations, and I had quite a strong pull towards the charity sector. So I spent quite a lot of time looking around for what charity I wanted to really use my skills to help the most, and saw Yes to Life, was very interested in the way it was set up. The history of it and the fact that it was looking at cancer in a completely different way to any of the other charities. I had volunteered for TCT a number of times before. A friend of mine worked
Cancer
there.
Trust.
Yeah. So I'd worked in their office as a volunteer. I'd done bucket collections for them. I quite liked the ethos of what they were trying to do. But it still didn't quite seem right, the right charity for me. And it was really upon meeting yourself and Claire Wallace, who was a trustee at the time, in the interview, that I came away and thought, actually, this feels completely right. Cancer wasn't the main focus for me, if I'm honest, when I was looking at the charity. The more I started to read about it and how devastating it was as a disease, and obviously once I'd started at Yes to Life, it has become my mission to help as many people as possible. And integrative medicine, as far as I'm concerned, is the widest possible choice for people to help them. It's about empowering people and giving them as many options rather than just the narrow options that are given to them within the current NHS system. So I've learned an enormous amount. You know, I didn't come in knowing an awful lot, but I certainly have read and continue to read enormous amounts of information across a whole wide range of things, and I'm still learning.
There's always more, eh? Yeah, so you're definitely what I call an above and beyond the call of duty sort of executive director, and you must do this because you think the Yes to Life is really vital. I mean, there are lots of hundreds of other cancer charities out there. So why do you think that the particular mission of Yes to Life is so important amongst all those?
If I look at it from sort of where I've put my money in the past in terms of supporting various charities, I think one of the unique things about Yes to Life is if people give us money, we can demonstrate exactly where that's going and what it is in terms of actually helping an individual person. So I love the transparency of what the charity is all about. And I'm frustrated beyond measure about the fact that people make donations to charities without knowing where that money is going into. And the whole sort of vacuum of research in my book is certainly not the answer in terms of actually helping people with cancer. Yes to Life is vital. It's the only charity that I've come across that has direct contact with people, empowering people, giving them support, and getting involved in their journey with them. So it's not about just giving them some help and then leaving them to get on with it. You know, we really do support people along the way, and no one else does what we do. So, you know, we're UK-wide, we're all cancers, we're all ages, and we're not prescriptive. So I think that's a really important thing, and why I think we are despite our size compared to other cancer charities, we are delivering a much better support system to people with cancer.
Mm-hmm. Giving them those choices. Yeah, so unbelievably, you've been here for 5 years since you took over the day-to-day running of the charity. It's gone mighty fast, hasn't it? Yeah,
it has. It has indeed, yes.
So in that time, some of the things, you know, right at the heart of our mission, our key services, they've continued. We're obviously, we've got more and more people we're helping all the time. But there are other things that have changed a lot in 5 years. Mm. So maybe you can tell us the things that you've introduced to the charity that you think you're most excited about, you're most proud of, the things that you think are delivering the most to people.
I think, you know, the core, you've sort of said about the core services that, you know, kind of where the charity started are still very at the heart of what the charity delivers. So I think kind of one of the things I've done is just put them in a more stable position than they probably were, you know, kind of before I came. And it's really important to have that sort of solid business process behind running a charity, because it just speeds things up and we can get more done more quickly and more professionally. And I think one of the things I like about the charity is, despite our size, we think really big, and we actually somehow manage to deliver really big. And we do have a bit of a laugh in the office sometimes when the phone rings and someone says, can you put me through to the accounts department, and I sort of lean across my chair to Jackie and say, oh, it's for you. So I think, you know, to the outside world, which is fantastic, you know, it's great that we have that, people think that we're a good solid, we have this big good foundation of business. So I've just developed those services. I think building the team of people that come into the charity is one of the key strengths I hope I've brought. It's something across my whole business life that, you know, I'm still in contact with people that have worked for me in all the places I've been. And I think it's like a family. It sounds a little bit cliched, but the extending kind of the events that means we're just getting more information out to people, I think, has been a great success. And just building a sustainable funding base for the charity, which is also one of the hardest things for any charities
to do. Yeah.
So, you know, we're being very innovative in what we're doing and how we're utilising the money that we have to go as far as it possibly can.
Yeah, I'd like to go into that a bit more later on, if that's okay.
Mm.
Yeah. Anything else that you particularly think is important that's happened in the last few years?
Well, we're doing some exciting things at the moment, and I think that just puts us into, you know, we had 2 years ago when we had our 10-year celebration, there was a lot of looking historically at where the charity had been.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's exciting is we're looking at where the charity is going to go. And there's a real shift change in kind of the view about the treatment for cancer. So the educational side is really exciting. We've delivered some amazing events where we're getting that information to people. And we're doing a lot more on our kind of awareness of what the charity does so that we can reach more people. So we're doing we have a new website that we'll have out this year. We've made a short film that we're just finishing at the moment. And we've looked really hard at our kind of what is our mission. So we've gone back with our trustees and we've reviewed, you know, what is it? What is Yes to Life and what direction is it going in? And we've sort of rechecked that what we were doing is the right thing and what we're doing going forward is the right way to go. And that's what I like about driving, you know, kind of the charity forward with a strong trustee base, which is another key element that I think is really key for charities to have behind them, and have this trustee board that's engaged to help us, you know, to deliver that.
Mm.
So I think it's very exciting where we are at the moment.
Mm. Okay, so maybe we could just hear a few of the facts and figures, you know, what Yes to Life's been delivering, you know, how many people we've helped, how much money, all that sort of thing.
So I was quite staggered, actually, because I haven't looked at the historical data in total for a little while, but in sort of working towards doing the interview, I've gone back to the first in 2006 when we started funding people. So up to February this year, we've actually funded to the tune of £548,102.07 in terms of money given directly to people to help them with their choice of what they want to do to support them. And I think for a charity our size, that's quite
a staggering
figure.
Great. Yeah.
And of course, our aim is to continue to do that and increase that and widen that to as many people that we can. When we're asking people to support us, there's always a case to be made about, well, where does my money go? But if somebody gives us £10, you know, if we had 100 people giving us £10 a month, we could support 150 people in a year with an award, or you could support 12 people for a whole year. So the whole point is, there's no point in giving somebody a small amount of money that means they can't actually really do what they want to do. If we could say to somebody that we can see what they'd really like to do is have 6 months worth of a particular therapy, if we can actually pay for that whole 6 months, the enormous relief for that person, and we hear it all the time when we talk to people, is just an enormous amount of support. So, you know, kind of just £10 a month does actually make a huge difference. And we are a nation of givers. We can see with things like Comic Relief and Help a Child and all these charities, we do want to help people. So we would just like more people to come to Yes to Life to do that. So and as I say, we can demonstrate where that money goes. So that's the sort of the funding data side of things. People do have to apply to us for funding. We don't just, you know, willy-nilly give out money to people. So we do have a strong process in place. We do check and do some means testing to make sure that people that are coming to us really need the support. And then we work really hard. I work alongside Claire Winterbourne, who does all the funding and administration, and we look at how best we can support somebody. So we're not just saying, here's £100. We're saying, okay, of all the things you've asked help for, what is the one thing that is going to help you the most? And then we try and deliver that support. And we found we've shifted more to that way of working in the last sort of 12 to 18 months. And I think that the results of that are really showing us that that's the way to go in terms of supporting people.
So very personalised.
Personalised, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, so how many people, you've got some figures there for how many people we've helped?
So that's 2,640 people that we have supported over the time that the charity's been running its funding scheme.
Right, great. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about money. I mean, finance is a big issue for many people with cancer, and I know that for many years, Yes to Life was the only place that people could get financial support for choices outside of conventional medicine. And things have got a little bit better now, but still our grants of financial support are lifelines for many people. Do you want to tell people, you know, exactly what's on offer from us? What do we offer in the way of direct support?
So if somebody, so one of the big things that we do as a charity, which we don't means test, is we will pay for somebody to have a consultation with Cancer Options, and that is with Patricia Pete. It's a phone consultation, and it puts people, a lot of the comments we get from people that have this consultation is it gives them a landing place somewhere that they can go. They have a report sent to them after the consultation, and it will set out all the options that are individualized to that person. We know you hear it all the time, you know, cancer is unique to the person that has it. You know, if you have breast cancer, it's your breast cancer, it's not the person down the road with breast cancer. So I think this very individualized approach that we can help finance really does help people feel that they've got something tangible to work from. So it may be in that report there are lots of suggestions of things that people then think, well, actually, I'd like to do this or I'd like to do that, but I just don't have the finances. It's tough, you know, people can't work often when they're poorly. And, you know, taking a healthy lifestyle can be quite expensive. So, you know, people can often may need some support financially with being able to get the things that they'd like to do. So they can approach us either through the helpline or by emailing us. They fill out a funding application form. We then look at what's on there. We go back to them and then we talk about how we can support them. And then they send receipts to us for the things they're paying for, and we will reimburse them, or we'll pay practitioners or therapists or clinics direct. So the more administration we can take away from that person, the easier the journey is for them. And they can come back to us once a month to ask for additional help. So what we always say is that we can't guarantee that we can help them, because obviously we look at what we've got in our funding pot and then we set a budget against that, and then Claire and I will work out each week who we can fund, and then they're advised that they've got an award and they can go off and do what they want to do. And that has an enormous benefit to people. We have testimonials all the time saying, thank you, no one else has listened, no one else has been able to help us, you can actually help me do what I've chosen to do. So
very important.
I think that's very important.
Yeah. So are there other ways that financially the charity helps people?
So last year we kind of we could see from our business model of funding that, you know, we would never have enough money coming in to sustain the demand. So obviously once people find out they can get help from us, you know, we could just literally increase that exponentially and never kind of increase the funding to match it. So we did a big push on starting to look at companies that we trusted in terms of the products that they were providing to the people we were funding. And so we've worked with a number of them now, and we have on our website under discounts a whole range of things that people that we're supporting can get discounts for. So a big area that companies are now supporting us is with the cost of supplements. Most people that come to us are taking some form of supplementation, so we've managed to negotiate really high discounts for those supplements. We're doing some of the ordering administration ourselves to enable us to get the highest rate of discount. But even if you're not a beneficiary of Yes to Life and are purchasing discounts, there's also a discount you can get as a member of the public, and these supplement companies will give a donation to the charity as well.
Great.
So it's great. So please, you know, do have a look on our website. There's massages, there's juices, there's different sorts of equipment. And we will continue to do that, because it just means the money we've got, we can spread much further.
Great. So what about the situation where people come along and they've looked at their report and everything and decided the best thing for them is not actually available here, they're going to have to go abroad to get it, and it costs a lot of money, and they maybe just, it's completely out of their ballpark as it stands.
So we have something called a personal fundraising scheme, which we've actually been running for several years. It's something that enables people to raise money themselves through their friends and family members off using giving sites like Just Giving, Virgin Money and BT Donate. And we help them with the administration of setting that up. We ask that they have a friend that supports them doing that. But they can send us their story, we can have a look at it and help them and guide them through the best way to for that site to have the most impact. And it's a bit of a hurdle for some people, because sometimes they don't want people to know they've got cancer. Other times they just really don't want to ask people for help. But our experience is very much that there's lots of people, friends, family members that do want to help but just don't know how to. So actually giving the option to sort of give them £20 on a giving site makes people feel engaged and partly involved in what that person is doing. And once people understand that, I think it gets them a little bit over that hurdle. But ultimately, it's their decision always if they want to do this. We've had some amazingly successful schemes running where people are having treatment abroad and not just, you know, kind of one go out in Germany. You know, with these treatments sometimes need to last for periods of time. The campaigns are continually running, so we encourage people to update their you know, their story. People will come back and donate again. We see anonymous donations coming in because people will just go on our pages on these giving sites and maybe like someone's story as well.
Right.
So it has lots of added benefit. And we will do all the administration. So we're doing all the payments out of the schemes. Jackie does all the reconciliation, sets up all the restricted accounts, so it's very tightly controlled. Again, completely transparent in terms of what money is in the schemes and what they're being utilised for. And it has, as I say, it's enabled people to sort of get on and do what they really feel they want to do. And we've had some fantastic success stories as a result of that.
So what do you mean by success stories? Are you talking thousands, tens of thousands?
In terms of the money people are raising, it can range for, you know, from £5,000 up to hundreds of thousands of pounds. We have had schemes that have raised in excess of £100,000.
Fantastic. So that gives you a lot of options you didn't have before.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's important, not that I'm, you know, over-plugging kind of these schemes, but there are lots of new schemes that have come out now, like GoFundMe and crowdfunding schemes. And, you know, because these schemes are run through a charity and we are registered as a charity, everything is completely transparent. We've had experience with someone setting up a GoFundMe scheme, not understanding the terms and conditions, not realizing that the whole amount of the target, if it isn't reached, they don't get any of the money. And, you know, sadly in this world there are people that might set up a scheme. We've also heard of this experience where anyone could set up a scheme and take the money and run, basically.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I would encourage people to, if they're going to do these other schemes, really make sure someone is supporting you in reading the terms and conditions. But call us, have a chat about what we're doing, and we can talk you through how ours works. And and, you know,
and you get the benefit of all the administration, of course, otherwise somebody's got to do all that. So basically,
yes, exactly. Yeah. Someone's got to have set up a separate bank account, you know, someone's got to manage the money. And that's all done for people that are running the schemes through the charity.
And lastly, because it's coming to a charity, there is actually the option of gift aid, which isn't available if it's not a charity, and that money is available to help other people.
It is, which is fantastic. So not only are you, you know, raising money for yourself, the charity receives gift aid from donations that are made by taxpayers, and that money goes directly back into funding, helping other people. So you're helping yourself and others at the same time.
Fantastic.
Which is great.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the social and political climate in which the charity operates now. It's changed significantly in recent years. And in some ways, the kind of way we think is much more acceptable these days than it was when we started out. But still, at the same time, integrative medicine's under attack. We got the current Charity Commission review, which was prompted by people who don't think much of complementary alternative medicine. And so I just want to know what your sense is of how things stand and where you think we're heading currently.
Well, I think we're definitely heading in the right direction, and I think the very fact that the Charity Commission have almost been arm locked into doing a review of charities that offer complementary and alternative medicine is because more people are taking it up and it's actually working. So we're obviously, it's a threat to those people that don't want to accept that this change needs to take place. So I, although it's obviously clearly very frustrating in terms of resource and time and having to engage with these things that happen, I just think it's an indication that there's a little bit of a fear on the anti-CAM side of things. It's also good, you know, the Charities Commission has a hard job to do, and in any market, whether it's, you know, a cancer charity, other charities, there are always going to be you know, they need to review things properly. So I'm not against, you know, kind of being looked at, because we've got nothing to hide. So we're very robust in what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the benefits that we're giving to people with cancer. And we will continue to do that. It just spurs us on, really, to just continue to do what we're doing and do it on a wider basis and get to more people so that they can actually educate themselves about what they can do for themselves as well as, you know, what they need in terms of support from others. And I think that's encouraging. The change will come from grassroots. I mean, if you look at history, it's often from grassroots that, that major things take, you know, changes have taken place in past years. And more people are starting to think, well, what can I do to help myself? Or what there must be something else.
Right.
And I think the more people have that almost light bulb moment at a diagnosis stage, the better, because people need to really wake up and take things seriously now. We can't be complacent about the way we're living, not just only in this country, but around the world. And we need to be responsible for our health. And I think we've allowed that to slip. And we're here, once people are engaged in that thinking, to help them get to where they need to be.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the key things that we can do as a charity to help people. So, yes, we'll wait the outcome in August of the Charities Commission paper. We'd like them to engage with us as part of the consultation, but let's wait and see if anything like that happens. And I think we can see the changes already happening, just from people that we're supporting.
Yes, I mean, you know, one of the really heartening things is to be recognised from certain quarters within the NHS that we're offering the thing that government's been going on about for years, which is patient choice. We're actually doing it, and to be talking to people in the NHS about that on a kind of respect basis for what we're doing is, it's quite recent, but it's incredibly refreshing, and it does signal a change in attitude from within the health service, which is brilliant.
Yeah, and we've got great, you know, we've got people coming out from under that are able to feel they can actually publicly talk about this. It's not that there aren't doctors and oncologists that don't understand that things need to change. It's just there's a, you know, we've lived in this world of almost not daring to speak. And I think that's changing. And we're seeing that with, you know, Dr. Chatterjee. We're seeing it with, we've got another fantastic doctor, Dr. Rupi. We've got great oncologists that we're speaking to now. And the more that come out of the woodwork and are prepared to stand up and say, well, actually, yes, it's really important. We're looking at this much wider range of things
lifestyle.
That people can be doing, like lifestyle changes, the better.
Yeah. No, it's very heartening. Dr. Chatterjee on the TV taking people off drugs and telling them to clean their life up is just superb.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's achievable. I think, you know, if you talk to people about you need to do this, sometimes we even hear it. You know, I'm on the helpline on a regular basis and you're sort of, you know, I won't be able to give up my 13 cups of tea a day or this.
Right.
You know, once you sort of engage them and talk to them and they actually understand that it's not about a punishment to give up things.
Mm.
It's actually switching the psychology in that, actually, that's fantastic because I can do that. With a bit of help, you know, people shift this, and I think programs that are on television at the moment, people can see that it actually helps and it does make a change.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It will make our job easier, hopefully, going forward.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'd like you to give us a whistle stop tour of the Esterlife team, who's who, how they contribute, and where they're located.
So in the office, I'm here full time. Idana has just joined us. She's been with us 2 weeks. So she's joined us as supporting me and doing all the event side of what the charity does, which is quite a big job. Jackie is our financial controller. She works 2 days a week for us. So she does all the money side of things and a lot more. So we're sort of the core kind of paid for staff in the office. We have John, who is an amazing volunteer who comes in. He was coming in once a week. He now comes in once a fortnight. He's helped us with lots of different things, from website to setting up our first race that we're going to do this year. We've had Laurie helping us a few months ago. Her mum's quite poorly at the moment, so she's focusing on raising money for her mum. But she was helping us with our life directory. Claire Winterbourne, who I mentioned earlier, works from home. She does all the helpline administration, the rotas for the helpline, and she also does all the funding administration. So she's reviewing all the applications coming in, and then we work out who we're going to fund, and she does all that side of things. We've got different volunteers that dip in and dip out. So a big thanks to Hilary, who has been a volunteer for the charity as long as I've been here and before.
Yeah.
She used to do our events. She's still very much engaged with the charity. She's our lady on the ground in Brighton. So we do quite a few events in Brighton. She's out there looking for venues and things for us, and is engaged, as I say, continually with the charity when we need her the most. And yes, as I say, sort of different volunteers at different times that come to do different types of project work. So we have interns that come and spend some time with us,
mm-hmm.
that want to learn about what we're doing and hopefully take away some experience of working with
the
charity.
Is that something you want people to know, that we need new interns?
Well, we do look to take... Summer's always a good time for interns because you've got lots of graduates that are mid... training, studying, so that's quite a good time for us to look for people. We have actually Anna, who's going to join us next week, so
mm-hmm.
she's going to come on board, and we have one of our beneficiaries' sons coming to do work experience for us for
Great.
A couple of weeks in July. So we're always welcome if people want to contact us. There's always enough work to do to spread out and to give people a good kind of grasp of what we're doing. And at the moment, as I say, we've got people kind of coming in, but later on the year, if people are interested, just get in contact with us. We're always happy to have a chat and see, even if it's maybe they can do a project from home and help with us on that basis.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned earlier your solid team of trustees. We've also now got an advisory board as well. Do you want to just
yes.
say a little bit about how many people are involved and how?
So we've got 7 new people that we've known for some time. They've done bits for us sort of in the past, but I think it was quite important to bolster our trustee board, which we've done in the last 12 months. But some people don't want the full commitment of becoming a trustee, but want to help the charity. And of course, they've got fantastic skills that we'd be foolish not to engage them to use. So we've got a range of, we have 7 people that we've just formed an advisory board, and they come from lots of varying backgrounds, filmmaking, TV producing, radio. We have scientific, campaigning, members. We have a lawyer who has joined us as well. So we kind of looked at the skill set that we needed in terms of people, and people that we knew, and just basically asked them, and they all said yes. So
Great.
You see, that's why we're called Yes to Life. So we like people saying yes to us.
Yeah.
And we've all met with our trustee board and had a lovely evening together. And I think going forward, we will definitely be calling on these people to take an active role in what the charity is doing with the skills that they've got.
Mm. Great new resource. Now, the charity's core service, the helpline,
yep.
you know, who's on that? How does it work? How do they get on it? Why are they qualified to be an operator? What's the whole picture?
So, as you say, it's a core part of our service, and it's one that we've been growing kind of slowly over the years. And they are all amazing. I mean,
right.
they're all very different,
mm-hmm.
and they are all amazing people. And I'm humbled by, you know, their dedication. You know, it's all right for me to sit here in the office running the charity, but they're kind of on the front line.
And they're all volunteers. Yeah.
They're all volunteers. They've either had cancer themselves, a family friend, or they've worked with people with cancer. So they know exactly what the state of that person is that's phoning into the helpline. And so there's natural empathy there in terms of supporting those people. So we have 15 helpline volunteers now.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them are on the helpline full time. Some people have done it for a long time. They've taken a bit of a break. But I'm going to quickly whiz through their names in no order.
Mm.
So this is a big thank you to Claire McCluskey, Claire Winterbourne, Fiona Brighton-Back, Juliet Morcus, Gladys Hall, Elisabetta Fumagalli, Diana Peterson, Melanie Sparks, Ruth Sharif, Elaine Godley, Suzanne Johnson, Sarah Hyatt, Linda Allenson, Susanna Rabi, Deborah White Hughes, and Wendy Temple Smith. The last few new ones, so welcome to the team, and we look to expand the helpline as we go forward and the lines get busier.
So when you say they're not on full time, what does being on full time look like?
So being on full time is once we have a training program, so if people want to be a helpline volunteer, they can contact the charity. Normally the process is I'll have a chat with them, Skype them, meet them first to see if they're the right people for the helpline. They then do a training program. We use external trainers to help us with that. And then they are given somebody to support them when they first go onto the helpline. So it's really important that they feel ready to take on the role. You're normally, as a new helpline person, you are given a day of the week that you work, and it's that day is your day. You're checking the calls that are coming into the helpline and calling back those people to see how the charity can help them. What we aim to do is have two people on per day as we get busier. On average, the number of calls have been sort of three or four a day plus two or three emails. So because we don't know what those calls are going to be like, they could be three really long calls or they could be three really quick calls. So what we're trying to do is make sure a helpline volunteer only deals with a maximum of four calls per day in their day. And hopefully with the new trainees that have just come on board, we will get nearer to being able to achieve that. And also we now have somebody that covers weekend calls as well, which we haven't done before. So we'd like to have 7 days a week, almost 24 hours per day cover for people. And that will come in time, I'm sure.
So there's nobody sitting there with a headset on like you see in the things. That's not how it works, is it?
We would be completely against a call centre approach to this. These are volunteers working in their homes remotely, and part of their training is about where they're taking the calls, how they sit, what the best time for them is. So a lot of it is around being in the right environment to make those calls, to be able to give the best support possible. So we do get together. It's really important, although obviously our helpline volunteers are all over the country. At least twice a year we arrange a get-together, which is a social gathering. We talk about what the charity is doing. A lot of our helpline volunteers will come to our events and offer to help as volunteers there as well. So they're not just sort of doing that role and left kind of out there by themselves to get on with it. Claire Winterbourne has constant contact with them, with doing the rotas and that side of things. And they can call into the office anytime if they're stuck with things. So the
location of people who are interested is not a bar then. It doesn't matter where they're working from, as long as they can attend the training.
That's it.
Yeah. Great. Okay, so who's calling up this helpline? Typical callers are calling about what, and what's their situation?
So it's actually changed, which is fantastic. I think when I joined, a lot of the helpline calls were from people that had been given a terminal diagnosis and they want to know, what can they do? There must be something I can do. Thankfully, somehow they found the charity and called the helpline. And of course, as I talked about earlier, there's lots of things that people can do to start helping themselves. And then with the consultation with Patricia, more structured protocols and things that are going to help them as an individual. We see more people contacting us now that are just diagnosed, which is absolutely fantastic, because you can start right at the beginning building this integrated package for them to look at and see if it's going to work for them and then support them. So, and also we have more men contacting the charity now, which is fantastic. I think when I first joined, we had a very few number of men. I think because people can email us now as well as call us, I think that's increased the number of people coming to the charity. We will still make a phone call from an email, so it's not a case of we just bashing back a quick kind of email to people in response to them. We will actually make a telephone call back to that person, because often we know from experience that they need to have somebody listen to what they've got to say, and I think that's really important. Mm. So we have all age ranges. We have quite a number of younger family members calling for their parents. So the parents are a bit more of the generation where they don't want to not listen to what their doctor's saying to them, and what the doctor says must go. But of course, there's this whole new swathe of, you know, healthy eating, juicing, all these great things that this younger generation are keen on, and they're of course trying to get their parents, you know, into juicing, and of course it's quite a big barrier. So having the charity support them in maybe engaging or speaking direct to the parents has been quite useful, I think, in terms of supporting kind of a family unit as much as an individual. So I think that's changed quite a bit as well.
All a good direction. Great. So you mentioned at the beginning the programme of events that the charity puts on. There's quite a few different kinds of events that are put out by the charity. Would you like to explain what's on offer?
Sure. So we've, as I said kind of earlier, I think we're doing more and more events. It's a big resource kind of pull, but it's really important for us to get all these great things out to people. So we're sort of split into four things now. We run a Lifestyle Choices and Cancer seminar, which is a half-day seminar, and we've done that around the UK in different places now, which is fantastic. That's really about giving good information out to people with cancer or to practitioners. We have an annual seminar, which is normally in November each year, and that's a big picture thinking type seminar where we're bringing international speakers in to look at a specific topic. We've got some exciting news about one we're going to do this year that you'll find out more about if you keep in touch with us. We do workshops, which are for smaller groups of people with cancer or their family, friends or carers can come along to. And we've done, so far this year, we've done a laughter workshop. We've got a trip to the linseed farm coming up next weekend. We do yoga exercise. We've done meditation workshops. We've done cookery demonstration workshops. So often people will come to us and say, I'd like to run this workshop. And obviously we engage in with these people. We check that what they're doing sits with what the charity's mission is. So that's really exciting to be able to get a group of people together, often with the added benefit that they actually create a mini support group within the people coming along to the workshop, which I think is lovely.
Yeah.
And we're also doing a few more evening talks, which we started last year, where we have one speaker talking about a particular subject. So we've got a few coming up in the next couple of months. One about Chinese medicine, one about medicinal mushrooms, one about food and nutrition, and we will look to kind of build on, I think, the sort of the evening talk. It can be more accessible to more people in terms of being able to come along to these, and we hope to also extend those around the country. It will be more easier for us to manage that in terms of events. So we've got quite a full calendar of events happening this year already.
Right, great. All details on the Yes Live website
and on our Facebook page as well.
Right, yeah, great. So one thing that's very significantly changed, I know, during the time you've been here, and this is, you've driven this very much, is the whole presence on the web and in social media in particular. I think it's really important because this is the way that you talk directly to people, isn't it, as an organisation, and that's what we're doing. We're helping people directly, so it's very important. Maybe you'd like to just tell us all the different ways that people can find us out there.
Yeah, so we have invested, we sort of took a little step back and I'm sure we were doing what lots of other small charities and small businesses do. It was like, oh my God, we've got to be on Facebook, and oh my God, we've got to be on social media, and oh, what should we put on today, and quick, get something, oh look, we've got this event. So lots of kind of slightly frenetic, we've got to, we must do these things. And then we sort of took a deep breath and said, okay, we need to do this properly. And actually, you know, social media for a charity outside is a massive tool for us to get out to people, not just in this country, but you know, into wider spheres as well. And it's amazing who engages with us kind of from all over the world now, kind of on Facebook and on Twitter. So we have a proper strategy in place now for social media. We've had some learning experiences with an agency that's taught us how to use these tools for the best kind of awareness values that we can get in terms of extending to a wider audience. And it's sort of evolutionary, you know, we have to, we can't just accept that the way we're doing it now is the way forward,
right.
Because
changes
as we know, Facebook is a very clever tool, Twitter's a very clever tool as well, Instagram is fantastic for a younger generation, so you know, we're well aware of using that as well. And our website, you know, we know it's a big communicator for us, which is why we're doing this development phase for a new one at the moment. So yes, you can find us on all of the main social media channels, just looking for Yes to Life on all of them. We also have, as some of you will know, The Cancer Revolution, which is our book that we launched, and that has its own Twitter feed, it has its own Facebook as well. So we've got, you know, multi-platforms that we can use to deliver the right messages in the right audience. And I think we will use that going forward and continue to learn about kind of the benefits that it can offer us at a really cheap, cost-effective way of delivering our messaging out to the country and as I say, beyond.
Right.
So we have a nice, we've sort of built up a group of people that blog for us regularly, which is fantastic. And they're busy people. They're writing blogs for their own businesses, websites and things as well. So they're very generously giving us time. We link that all into our social media. And it gives us a good platform to have a voice. We don't do a lot of campaigning publicly, but I think with our blog we can certainly use that to get some messaging out there that we're not complacent about what's taking place and how we can try and be part of a campaign for change as well. So we've got some fantastic recipes on there that people donate to us. We have personal stories of people that we're supporting that will write for us on there. So there's a whole mixed bunch of really great stuff for people to read and access. And you can get to that from our website or just searching
for us.
So you
just sign up and you're going to get something for everyone. Okay, well, look, I think we're going to have to finish there. I think we're just about out of time. Thanks a lot for talking to us today. I'd like to say a big personal thanks from me for picking up the charity when you did and all the things you've done with it since, which have been fantastic. The overall development and the day-to-day running of the whole organisation has been brilliant. So, yeah, big thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that's given you a fair understanding of the what, the why, the how and the who of Yes to Life, and will encourage you to use our support services, to tap into our social media and programme of public events, or to support our efforts in some way. The only reason we can deliver the services that we do is because the public want it to happen and are prepared to put their hands in their pockets or to join our team in some way. Do get in touch via any of the means that Sue detailed or by looking on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, if you'd like to follow up on anything that we talked about today. I'm delighted to let you know that on June the 13th we're hosting the dynamic Chris Walk, who is visiting from the USA, for an evening talk at the China Exchange in London. And on the 17th of June, we have another of our regular workshops. This one, led by our own Elisabetta Fumigalli, is on healing with painting. For details and booking for both of these events, go to the Yes to Life website and look under events. There's also a full range of links to items mentioned in today's show on the Yes to Life website. Look under Media Centre and then under UK Health Radio. Thanks very much for listening today. I hope you can join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.